Hello and welcome to R&R's Real Stories in Restoration. This sub-series of our Ask the Expert podcast shares the stories of the people in restoration and remediation from all corners and levels of the industry. I'm your host, Valerie King, R&R's Editor-in-Chief. I'm joined today by Scott Harding, Provincial Manager at SAH Disaster Restoration Services, Vancouver Trauma Cleaning, and BC Trauma Cleaning Group, all located in British Columbia, Canada. Thank you for joining me, Scott.
Thanks for having me.
Can you start by explaining the relationship between the three business entities I mentioned in my intro, how long they've been around, the services they offer, those things?
Yeah, no problem. So I started my first company in 2011, and then I decided to start another company on my own without a business partner approximately 5 years ago. And that's when I started SAH Restoration. And it's been a lot of hard work, I'll tell you that. You know, long days around the clock, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 hour shifts, waking up in the middle of the night, you know, whatever it takes. That's what I did. And I'm still doing it. So I started getting into restoration. And then I thought to myself, should I get into the plumbing or trauma cleaning? So I decided to get into trauma cleaning because what happens is, someone who wants a plumber calls a plumbing company, someone who wants restoration calls a restoration company. So we were already doing a lot of trauma cleaning. So I decided to start the trauma brand. So when someone wants trauma cleaning, they would call Vancouver Trauma Cleaning. And then we started getting in the trauma door. And then it also brings work from the trauma side of the business to our restoration side, such as cleaning, mold, asbestos, hoarding, all that stuff. And then it leads into repair. So it's worked out quite well for us.
Very good.
With BC Trauma Cleaning is our newest name we started. So I wanted to be able to expand throughout British Columbia to Vancouver Island and Northern British Columbia and into the Okanagan Valley, Thompson Valley. So it just makes sense that, you know, as we're growing, we have a system in place to expand. So that's where BC Trauma Cleaning comes into play.
Okay. Thank you for that context. So as far as customers, what areas do you provide services to, and do you lean residential, commercial, or both?
So we service, our biggest service area is Vancouver and the Fraser Valley. We go up to Whistler. We've done jobs on Vancouver Island. We're in the Okanagan Valley. We travel all over British Columbia, more specialty related jobs. So I would say it's a mix of residential, commercial, nonprofit. So a lot of our residential work comes from people calling us, say in the afternoon or the middle of the night on a weekend saying, my house is flooded, I need someone right away. So that's our website's designed that way. They go onto our website, our number's there, they call us. So residential and commercial is like that. And then we've built relationships with strata companies and property managers, business owners, that type of thing. And for the longest time, we've been doing a lot of nonprofit work. And I really like dealing with nonprofit work compared to, say, insurance companies, insurance adjusters. I find it's more rewarding for myself and for my staff. So it's always changing. Just whatever is available, we'll get to it. So we do have streams of work coming in from different clients.
Good to know. What about staff? How big is your staff and how many locations do you have right now? Just so I'm clear on the location number.
So we're roughly 20 staff, and it's more on the mitigation, abatement, remediation content side. And a lot of the repair work, we use subcontractors for drywall, for painting, for flooring, for cabinets. And we have a construction manager managing that side of the business. So I act as a district manager, regional manager type thing. I've got a general manager who runs our Coquitlam location. His name is Garnet Brayshaw. And we actually started working together in 2008 at a previous company, and we've worked together ever since. And he's been a big help. And then I have an assistant manager named Chris Graham, and she started just like me as a laborer. And now she's a water damage tech, I think fire tech, on her way to her master's. And she's been an asbestos building inspector for 5 or so years now. So it's nice to see her kind of grow up in the industry and provide direction to our staff. I've got some office staff now. It's great. Accounts receivable, accounts payable, estimating, invoicing, SEO. And then obviously we have our water damage technicians in the field. We got Jake, Nikita, Jacob, Mike, Jaylene, Kira, Lee, Melissa, Jordan, Camille. Again, working with lots of subcontractors, which helps us deal with the larger jobs. We use a company called Cygnus Contracting in Vancouver. His name is Matt Leger, and me and him have become really close. He's helped us respond to a lot of the floods when I started on my own. So it was me and him going out to the jobs, and it was hilarious. You know, we're going out in the middle of the night, and this next thing you know, let's go to Denny's, and we'll go to Denny's after a job. And next thing you know, we're on to another job and on another job. Just when the rain hits here, it's never ending, and you know, we just do what it takes. So we have an on-call team as well. Our girls in the office, Melissa, Sarah, and Jen, they even participate on the on-call team. So we try to have at least 3 or 4 people on call at a time, for a week at a time. We use some temp agencies for larger jobs, and we have our managers and supervisors manage those jobs with the temp agency. So again, about 20 staff, and honestly, I couldn't do it without them.
That's such a nice description of the staff and their growth within the company and all of their unique contributions. But it's also helpful to hear your use of a diverse array of resources, from your own in-house staff to temps to subcontractors. It's nice to understand how different restoration business owners are working that, especially in a world where finding talent is a bit challenging, to say the very, very least. So I understand there's a method to the separation of the disaster restoration brand from the trauma cleaning brand. And you talked a little bit about that already, but can you talk more about the thinking behind that separation of the brands?
It's actually worked out really good for us. So with Vancouver Trauma Cleaning, was my first trauma cleaning brand that we went with. And at the start of the COVID pandemic, we were reached out by Vancouver's largest health authority, and they were looking to put contractors together on a list. And from what I understand is that they couldn't find anyone at the time to do COVID cleaning, to respond to outbreaks and then influenza and things like that. So Vancouver Trauma Cleaning has been great. So we established that relationship, and with the person putting together the contractor list, they basically said they couldn't find anyone. And I said to them, I said, I'm ready to go. Because I knew when we were going to start getting floods and fires and emergency call outs, I'd be in someone's house in the middle of the night, in the middle of the start of the COVID pandemic, and not have a clue what was going on. So I set aside several days. I worked with industrial hygienist. We got work procedures in place, PPE training, purchased a whole lot of equipment. So when they called, I was ready to go. And I remember on the first night of the lockdown in British Columbia, we had a call at, you know, 1 a.m, and 5 or 6 of our staff were out there, and we were okay. We were masked up. We had our sanitizers, our foggers, our hydroxyl machines, our air scrubbers, Tyvek suits, and we were ready to go. So with the trauma cleaning, you know, I decided to start expanding it and getting into Fraser Valley and Thompson Valley, Okanagan Valley, up into Whistler Trauma Cleaning. So I've secured a lot of the trauma cleaning names to really just capitalize on that brand, because it just opens so many doors and gets us into the nonprofit organizations. We do a lot of the drug overdoses and cleanups after that, fentanyl labs. And now I'm just going with it. It's really worked out for us.
Interesting. So how would you describe your role, turning back to you individually, your role as provincial manager, your high-level objectives, and your day-to-day responsibilities?
It's hectic, I'll tell you that. So I do all the talking with the new clients. So if a client calls in and they have, say, a flood or a fire or some sort of cleanup to do, or repairs, asbestos, I field those calls the office will forward them to me and I'll try to talk to them right away or call them back. And then we dispatch the crews. So I'm doing a lot of dispatching. Someone has a fire or flood. I'm sending this person here, this person there. We're in multiple cities. And we're just trying to make sure that we get to all the jobs and keep everyone happy. So a lot of logistics. I take the on-call phone at nights and weekends. So a lot of times at 2 a.m, I'm woken up to someone crying or, you know, someone ran into my house. My ceiling is falling down. The garage is on fire, you know, that type of thing. And I've been on the on-call team now. I've been on call for about 15 years. And I just go out to the floods. I've got a emergency response vehicle at my house. I'm normally the first one that dispatched to the jobs after hours. And I call some of the other team. And again, I couldn't do it by myself. It's some of the situations we get into are quite hectic. We did a job last week in a crawl space and a boiling hot water line was ruptured under a building. There was mold everywhere. We did another crawl space job a couple of weeks ago, a foot of water. It's never ending. So some days we could have 2 jobs come in. Some days we could have 10 and we just have to be ready. So we have the flood van in Fraser Valley, one in Coquitlam in Vancouver, and all our technicians are ready to go. So I'm doing the dispatching. We do large losses around British Columbia and we've actually went into Alberta. There was some flooding in Calgary and some fires in Fort McMurray we responded to. I do a lot of updating and talking to clients as well. So that's important. So I try to make it that the client doesn't have to contact us. We contact them and they know what's going on. So they're always happy as they can be. I do a lot of site inspections, kind of landing jobs, dealing with some of the estimating. Another big day-to-day thing is cash flow. So in an expanding business, it's a hard business. You know, we're normally paid every 3 to 6 months after a job is done. We've had some jobs that's a year to year and a half till we get paid. So managing the funds, the cash flow, working with our clients and our office staff, accounts receivable department, accounts payable department, making sure our contractors are paid, you know, within 30 days, making sure everyone is happy. So that's a lot of my day-to-day stuff. And also it's working with the staff is a big thing. Making sure they know what they're doing, making sure they have the right tools, credit cards, you know, a decent vehicle, nice uniform, training. It's busy, I'll tell you that.
So how long, can you remind me, how long have you been a restoration and remediation pro? And what's the story behind your joining the industry? How'd you find your way here?
So 2006, I graduated business college. I'm from Ontario originally, just outside of Toronto, a town called Peterborough. So the story is I hadn't seen my brother in 5 or 6 years. He had moved to British Columbia. He was working at a restoration company and he said, come on out. So I did. I needed a job. So he gave me a job as a laborer. And pretty much right away, I joined the on-call team and I didn't have a vehicle. So I've got the flood van, this old stinky flood van. And that was my main vehicle for that summer until I could buy my first truck. So it was pretty funny. It was the flood van. You go around and we pump out, you know, water and sewage out of people's houses. And then, I started becoming the on-call guy, then the operations manager there. And eventually I started my own company and here I am today. So I started doing a lot of training, trying to get every certification I could. I was trying to get 4 or 5 a year. And then I wanted to create myself as a specialist and kind of have that niche in the industry. And I thought like more certifications I would get, potentially it would bring in more business. And what I really found out is that it's just about customer satisfaction, talking to people, being real, find out what their problem is and solving it. So that's a big thing. I listen to people, I let them get things off their chest and I figure out how we can fix, you know, their problems. When I started SAH Restoration, it was crazy. I didn't have a lot of money to put into the business. I had a limited amount of equipment. maybe a couple vans and 30 fans and a couple D-hums or something like that. So I had some strategic partnerships with some other businesses and was able to borrow their equipment and kind of get things going. And I remember a lot of days, you know, you wake up in the morning, 6 or 7, you go to work, everyone's leaving at 4:30 p.m. and then you're still working. You work all through the night, you know, 12 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, having black coffees, getting your paperwork done, getting your estimates out, your invoices out. The staff arrive the next morning at 8 o'clock. You're still there. You go get them set up on the jobs. You know, that's what it took to get me going, leaving job sites at 10 o'clock at night. And now it's just blows my mind that, you know, we have a business with 20 staff and we have the office and the warehouse, cube vans. We have about 20 fleet vehicles, nearly 70 or 80 D-hums, several hundred fans, air scrubbers, all the stuff. And clients are calling every day and we're keeping people employed. We're helping out, doing what we can, creating opportunities. It's something. And again, if I didn't have a great team behind me, I couldn't handle this all. So I have to put my my trust in the people that work for me. And I have 100% faith in what they do and the decisions they make. It's great seeing that people have stepped up to the plate for me and the company, and we're kicking butt.
So I understand your business has grown. You talked a little bit about that earlier. Can you talk more about it? How your business has grown over the last few years? You know, how much and what's fueled that growth?
Well, I guess at the first, I wanted to succeed. I wanted to grow a company. I never thought it would grow at this pace, and it's got to a level where I'm happy with it, and it's manageable, and that's nice. And in terms of growth, you know, you can only take a business so far, and you have to kind of slow it down. So I've been trying to level it out and manage what we have and do an outstanding job. So the late nights, you know, keep pushing through, and you're tired, you want to go home, I just keep pushing through. Just get it done, right? I wanted to have the big company, and it's kind of changed to wanting to have the big company to wanting to help our clients and provide employment to our staff. So I get enjoyment out of that. I've tried to surround myself with my friends and my family. When I was working a lot more than I am now, you know, I was doing 70 or 80 or 100 hour weeks or more. And now I'm probably down to 50, which is nice. And I get my weekends off and evenings, but I wanted to be surrounded with my friends and family. And it's nice being able to still work with my brother and a stepbrother and close friends. It's awesome. Let's just say that, right? We go to work, we have a lot of fun, have a lot of laughs, and we all have that common goal of doing a good job. So I think with business growth, it's talking to people, updating them, keeping them in the loop, explaining things in detail so they know what's going to happen, you know, laying out the whole process for restoration. Your house is burnt down. What are you going to do? Well, this is the steps you're going to do to restore it. And, you know, we're trying to push as fast as we can to get you back in your home, get your house restored or your basement or whatever it is. A lot of people are out of different provinces or out of country, having meetings with them and communicating with them, making them feel like they're part of the process. We do a lot of photographs, documenting everything. So growth is just doing a good job. And I think if you're a good person and do your best, it's just going to come naturally. That's been what I've been striving for.
Thanks, Scott. So in our chat prior to this, you talked about the importance of keeping up with the times. And you've talked about that throughout this interview. Really just, you know, whatever the world brings you, you seem to jump at it with an open mind and take risks and learn new things quickly. So can you share more about that and offer examples?
Yeah. At the end of the day, it's all about safety for me. Safety of myself and the ones that work, people, my staff who work for me and my clients. So if I'm on the job site first, I need to know what's going on. I need to if I'm sending my staff there, I need to give them a warning and make sure they know the hazards. And if the homeowners or clients or whomever is returning to the house, they need to be safe when they go back. So a lot of this, I guess, started with asbestos. If we're going into a flood and there's a wet drywall or vinyl sheet flooring or texture, anywhere there could be asbestos, we don't want to expose asbestos. We don't want our workers to get an asbestos-related disease or our clients, things like that. So it really started with asbestos and mold. And then it's changed. Some of the things we're dealing with now is fentanyl and drug overdoses, drug labs, that type of thing. And in British Columbia, there's a drug, not a pandemic, it's a crisis, drug crisis. And we're going to overdoses all the time where people have, you know, they've passed away due to drug usage, fentanyl, right? So we're going to places where we have potential exposure to harmful drugs. So we needed to be prepared. I needed to know how to identify a user site versus a drug lab. So it's been different. And at the end of the day, it's about safety. When COVID happened, I knew I was going to be on a COVID job or a flood or somewhere, someone was going to have COVID. And we had to be prepared. We hired the industrial hygienist and we were ready to go. So I just don't want to be in these situations and we're not prepared. So training is very important with keeping up with the times, taking the next step. We were doing some lead testing courses, things like that. Some stuff we might use in our business, some we won't, but we just have to do it and see what happens, right? So I think training is great. With the COVID, it was so big during the start of the pandemic, and it still is big, where there's the contact tracing team is contacting us direct and dispatching us to places within 24 hours or immediately to do cleaning. We have to have teams ready of 2 to 4 teams, sometimes up to 10 people. How do I get those people ready to do that cleaning? Again, it's just being ready, and safety is a big thing for me. Other things are equipment, you know, reading the different newsletters and the magazines, your magazine, checking out what other companies are doing. You know, we're using the new dry ease equipment. It draws less power. Going to the training courses, taking what we learn at the training courses and utilizing it into our business. So keeping up is very important. All the apps were a paperless system, which is great. So we use an app for the job tracking, for our invoices, our estimating. Great app for all the technicians for the photographs. We use Matterport, which is a big thing in the industry now with 3D imaging. So we can, one of the ladies, she'll go to the houses and she does a 3D image before and after our jobs. And it's great for walkthroughs or if clients are out of town. And we just have to take the plunge, make the investment, and just do it if we want to keep up. If not, we'll just fall behind.
You also mentioned when we chatted before this, working with British Columbia's largest healthcare organization. So what does that involve?
It involves a lot. It's very demanding, and that's okay. So they want a quick turnaround on their jobs. They might email us a job or make a call. Hey, can you have someone here in 2 hours or in the morning? We have someone leaving a hospital that needs to return home. Their house is, they're in a hoarding situation. There could be mold. There could have been someone that was very sick and bodily fluids to clean up. And they really count on us. We also got involved again with the COVID cleaning with them, responding on weekends and evenings and having the teams ready to go. Finding staff to do that type of cleaning, it's extreme scenarios. And the staff that do it, it's hard work. You know, it's wearing a Tyvek suit, respirator, gloves, safety glasses all day long, you know, potentially up to 5 days a week. That's 40 hours a week in one of those suits. And seeing how some people live, it's something, I'll tell you. And I'm happy that we're able to help out and do our part. And I'm be able to employ people and work with them to provide those services, because a lot of people won't do it. They're just going to say, no, we're not going to do that. And what we do is everything no one else wants to do. It's these scenarios you see on TV, the worst of the worst. You know, we've been to places with thousands of needles, and we've carried out barrels of needles with people are using in drug dens. And we've been in the fentanyl labs, some of the first fentanyl labs found in Vancouver. So we're getting into all sorts of stuff. But in terms of working for the healthcare organizations, it's great. It's nonprofit work. There's a lot of one-on-one with our clients. It's very rewarding for me. And I'm very happy that, you know, we took the time and we got this opportunity, and we're doing our best with it.
Thank you. I just want to make sure, follow up on that, make sure I'm clear here. So when you say you're working with the healthcare organization, is it that they are reaching out to you when they have basically project opportunities? There's a need tied to maybe a patient that they're serving. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
So that's how the partnership works?
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. All right. So you also talked about asbestos licensing when we chatted. So what about that? Is there experience, is there perspective you can share with us on asbestos licensing from your work in the asbestos world, considering adding asbestos removal to services, all of that maybe that our listeners could take note of?
I think water damage, fire and asbestos, they're all the same. They all go together now. So almost every water damage claim or fire job, mold job, we're coming across asbestos. So it's in the drywall mud, it's in the drywall texture, it's in the vinyl sheet flooring, it can be in attics and vermiculite insulation, it can be in mortar. It's all throughout a house. And with water damage, we're a lot of times doing a 2-foot cutout. So I train all our staff on water damage and asbestos awareness. I want to make sure that staff are trained and can recognize asbestos. And then we bring in myself or asbestos building inspector or a third party environmental consultant to do the testing. So any house older than 1990 needs to get tested. And a lot of the older houses are the houses you're having problems with. So safety is big. So a lot of jobs are plumbing leaks, things like that, where a plumber is sent in and the plumber may or may not have asbestos training, and they may open up drywall to fix a leak. And then there's an asbestos exposure. Our staff need to be trained. Hey, this drywall was asbestos. It was cut into, wasn't done properly. They need to know how to clean that up so they're not exposing themselves. We're going into renovations where there's ceilings were scraped by contractors, potential asbestos dust everywhere. They need to recognize these things to protect themselves. You know, we're in this these hazardous atmospheres or environments daily, and we need to protect ourselves because we can't have our workers exposing themselves to asbestos day after day, because down the road they're gonna, you know, feel the health side effects. It's not gonna be pretty. So asbestos awareness, it's so important. I pass along this document. It's called the Low Bid Document, and it's from WorkSafe British Columbia. And it's basically warning homeowners of the low bid for asbestos, saying that low bids may not necessarily follow the asbestos guidelines and could be exposing you to asbestos. So I try to focus on specialty related asbestos jobs, so daycares, doctors, hospitals, insurance work, things like that. And we don't want to cut any corners. We want to take the necessary time, set up the containment, set up the negative air, have the wash stations, all the PPE, the signage, all the documentation. So get your training, take your time, read the manuals, get familiar with it. Don't just think because you can set up a piece of plastic, you're an asbestos removal company, right?
Wow, a lot there. Thank you. All right, so I'm excited to ask this question because you've hinted at so many projects. So what's your most memorable project and why is it your most memorable project?
So I thought about this question and I see a lot of companies online, and they're posting photos and videos of these gruesome jobs. I disagree with that. I think that's confidential between the company and the client. So we try not to do that. We try to keep, you know, our online SEO or marketing photos, that type of thing, to somewhat clean, right? So we've seen all sorts of jobs, trauma jobs that you don't want to hear about. Again, the fentanyl labs, crawl spaces, multi-story floods and fires, crazy needle jobs, and just whatever it is, crime scenes, suicide cleaning, you know, basements full of human feces right up to the top stairs, the whole basement full of it. Just the dirtiest of the dirty, disgusting jobs. And I find more of my memories are with my staff or my friends that we do the jobs with. And we go in, we suit up, we try to have fun, we have some laughs. And, you know, I could talk to multiple different staff or past employees or coworkers from the past, and we'll all have these funny stories that we share. And to me, that's what it's about, those memories with the staff or friends, family, that type of thing.
Thanks for sharing that perspective. I love it. Now, what's your biggest challenge right now as we head into the takeaway section of our interview?
Biggest challenge. Well, the biggest challenge was trying to keep up with the growth of the business and keep the funds coming in. I didn't have, we didn't have any outside sources of funding. So it was mostly funded with my time and money to get started. And now it's operating as a standalone entity, which is great. So we've got to a certain level, and now it's maintaining the business, making sure the sales, you know, stay consistent, and we don't fall, you know, our growth doesn't fall, but we're maintaining. And when we're ready to kick it up to the next step, we will. But once you get to a certain point, maintaining a business is a challenge. So it's nice to be at that point where a lot of businesses, it takes, you know, their growth period is 10 years to get to where we have been in several years, right? So just managing it. And now with all the apps, the paperless system, everything that is out there available to us, we've utilized. We needed to go to paperless timesheets, the photo apps, all the Xactimate, the Matterport, everything is paperless, the job tracking. So everyone has the information available to them, not just me. It's our whole company can find the information. So that's been a big help, is all this new technology. So again, finances has been tough. Sometimes, again, waiting 3 to 6 months to get paid for projects. You take on a $50,000 or $100,000 project and you're not getting paid for 6 months. And then you take on another one and another one, and you have 10 or 15 of them on the go at one time. So it's challenging managing that. And we have to get our jobs done at a reasonable time. We want to stay on budget. We want to do a good job. And then we want to send the bills out, you know, within a week of doing the project. So getting the company to this point where we can take on those projects, do a great job, send the bills, follow up, it's a very big relief. And it was hard to do, but again, we just had to do it. You had mentioned some of the big lessons from the past. So I would say one that is important though. So we want to do our best. We always try to do our best. And even though we do our best, one little thing could go wrong and it's not the end of the day. So we're trying to do our best to keep everyone happy. And that's the end of the story. But at the end of the day, there might be something that happens and someone's not happy, and that's okay, because we're doing our best. And if someone's not happy, we'll try and do our best to keep them happy. So it's a tough industry, because no one wanted this to happen to them. No one wanted a disaster. No one wanted to lose their house. No one wanted their documents to burn or their clothes or lose, family heirlooms or whatever it is. So we have to work through all these situations with our clients. And it is rewarding. You know, at the end of the jobs, they always say to us, it's kind of funny. It was really nice meeting you, and we hope we never have to call you again. So I hear that almost every job, and I say, well, hey, you can call me if you want to say hello. Just don't call me for another flood.
So time for talking tools. What tool or technology do you consider most critical to your company's success, whether that's the business side, the field side, or both?
That's a hard question to single it down to a certain tool or a piece of equipment. I think it's the whole process is important to us. And I've tried to streamline it. So it's like, you know, McDonald's or Wendy's or something like that. From start to finish, there's a process and a procedure. The emergency call comes in. We dispatch people in the trained technicians in a flood van, a nice uniform. They're polite when they show up. They do a good job. They leave the job site clean. We communicate. We take photos. We've got all the newest tools, you know, FLIR cameras, moisture detectors, all that stuff, the Matterport. We use Xactimate. We do our repair scopes. It's a whole process, and everyone plays an equal role, which is very important. So I wouldn't take it down to just to one tool.
Great answer. Okay, so what sources do you turn to for inspiration and education as you've grown your business, as you focus on stabilizing and just maintaining its status these days? And yeah, where do you turn for advice and knowledge?
Well, definitely it started with the IICRC for me when I wanted to become a water damage technician. It was crazy. When I first took my few courses, one of the teachers said, well, I used to have a company with like 10 staff and so many equipment. And I was thinking, wow, like, that's so amazing. And then I look back, I was like, holy smokes, you know, like here I am. So IICRC started it all for me. And then there's a company we use in Vancouver called RJ Environmental. They provide our asbestos training, and we work with some of the hygienists. So that's great. The Asbestos Institute online has some basic training for newer staff to kind of browse things like that. It's not that specialized, but it's a good start. We use Safety Express in Richmond. Our sales rep is Todd Glidenstern, and we get our IICRC training through them. So the water damage, the applied structural drying, commercial drying specialist, that type of thing. Obviously R&R is great. We subscribe to the newsletter and just constant training. Anything new that comes up, try to get involved.
Thanks for sharing that. All right. That's almost the end of the Q&A, I'm sad to say. So finally, what is next for you in the business? Where are your sights set on?
I think I'm going to focus on BC Trauma Cleaning Group, work on setting up an office on Vancouver Island and in Okanagan Valley. So looking at purchasing a small office and getting situated there and kind of just manage the different locations. And it's nice to be able to switch it up. You know, we go to the island, to Okanagan, new challenges, new places, new faces. And it's fun for the staff to get away and do something different as well. So obviously business growth, and I've set up the company so we have it when we're ready.
Very good. This has been great. Thank you for a real inside look at your business. I think there's a lot here in terms of others learning from how you work, how you manage your business, and how you climbed up to where you are today. So we appreciate that. Before we go, where can listeners go to connect with you or learn more about SAH Restoration and Trauma Cleaning?
Our website is www.sahrestoration.com. or www.bctraumacleaning.com. If you want to send a message or an email, you can email our info lines and I'll get back to you. Thanks again, Valerie, for everything.
Oh gosh, this has been great. I'm excited to share it with the world. All right, listeners and viewers, for more insights on restoration, remediation, and the people behind it all, visit our website, rmagonline.com, also Apple or Spotify. If you haven't yet, be sure to follow the podcast to keep up with our latest episodes and give us a quick review and rating, pretty please. We're also on YouTube, LinkedIn, and Twitter, also Facebook, so we invite you to follow us there too. And of course, if you're interested in sharing your real story in restoration, no matter where you sit in the industry or world or level, please reach out to me at kingv@bnpmedia.com. This has been R&R's Real Stories in Restoration. Thank you for listening. Thank you.